This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right. They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait. There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
People all going somewhere, all with their own thoughts, their own ideas, all with their own personalities. One is wrong because he does right. One is right because he does wrong. Pull the string. Dance to that which one is created for.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 82, the gender-bending Ed Wood Jr. classic, Glenn or Glenda. Ed Wood, widely acknowledged erroneously as the worst filmmaker of all time, a sobriquet that I think should be bestowed upon truly cynical, big-budget filmmakers who make horrible, paint-by-numbers, focus-group-tested, shitty films. You're Michael Bay's. These types of guys, Ed Wood, on a minuscule budget, poured his heart and soul into his projects, and the outcome is something to be lauded. There's no way in hell this guy should be treated as the worst filmmaker of all time. My introduction to Ed Wood was via Leonard Maltin, whose film critic books I devoured as a kid, and he had a acronym, BOMB, B-O-M-B, which stood for Bottom of the Movie Barrel. And he gave these films that we love, like The Toolbox Murders, Maniac, Friday the 13th Part 2, you name it. He gave these BOMB ratings, or one-star ratings, and I took it upon myself to seek out all these films that he casually dismissed as being crap, and thought, geez, what would I think? And among those was Plan 9 from Outer Space, Glenn or Glenda.
Yeah, and the reality too is that, I mean, Michael Medved, he put out a book called The Golden Turkeys, and these were the worst films of all time. And he said, this is where the sobriquet came from. He said, the worst film of all time, i.e. the worst director, is Edward D. Wood Jr. for Plan 9 from Outer Space. And so I remember hearing, oh, this is the worst movie of all time. This is the worst when I was young. And when I put in it, Plan 9 from Outer Space for the first time, when I rented it, I was, I had a grin on my face from like the first frame to the last. Yes, there was so much technical ineptitude.
Yeah.
Yes, there was a plethora of stock footage. Yes, you had Bela Lugosi, who was the poor man, you know.
He was racked with back pain and overcome with, substance abuse, and he was it heroin or...
Morphine, whatever.
Morphine, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, and he kicked the bucket, you know, like after filming one scene, and then Ed Wood just...
in great replaced fact, him. Yeah.
Just said, hey, let's keep going, and he replaced him with a very unconvincing... double, you know, was about a foot taller, you know, just covering his face with a
cape. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you had different confusion, you had nonsensical dialogue, future events such as these will affect you in the future, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You had cardboard plates.
Paper plates just on a string just being sent across the screen as...
UFOs,
yeah.
But the reality of the matter is that I absolutely adored this movie, and... You know, when you say this is the worst movie ever made, I mean, you have
those to... Those are fighting words. You've got to back that up.
I mean, the reality is, right now, I'm wearing a Planet from Outer Space t-shirt. This wasn't meant to be, you know, this is radio, not TV, right? So it's not like I did this premeditated. I just grabbed a shirt and put it on. But the reality is, I'm wearing a Planet from Outer Space t-shirt. Thousands of people wear Plan 9 t-shirts, Bride of the Monster t-shirts, Glenn or Glenda t-shirts. Yeah. Nobody wears a fucking Rob Marshall Chicago t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or whoever the fuck made the artist t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, these are films that won the...
P.S. I Love You.
Yeah, these are films that won the... Well, not with these P.S. I Love You. These are films that won the Academy Award for Best Picture of the Year. So, it stands to reason. Best Picture of the Year should be in the best pictures of all time. No, there's some of the most forgettable movies of all time. You know, I'll add more to that pile. What won the Academy Award last year? Do you even remember?
I can't remember.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And as a film buff and a cineast, I self-styled cineast, I should remember this, but I forget. You know?
The Help?
No. God, no.
I can't tell you.
Well, you know, remember you're the Crash one? When it...
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not talking David Cronenberg's Crash.
No, that was awful. Yeah.
What I'm saying to you is nobody would ever say that Chicago, A Beautiful Mind, Crash, The Artist... Forrest Gump, whatever one last year, I don't even remember, change your lives. But
for
so
sure.
Many other films that did not, like Taxi Driver, The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, etc., change your lives. People will say that Planet of the Outer Space changed their lives because there's something just so endearingly amazing about that movie. And when you look at the career of Edward D. Wood Jr., there's something so endearingly amazing about this man. I mean, this was a man who was a true outsider artist. This was a man who all he wanted to do was make films. All he wanted to do was, yes, he wanted the critical adulation. He wanted to be accepted into the world of Hollywood. But you know what? It just never happened for him. But it didn't matter. He was undaunted. He would just make movie after movie after movie. And most of the time, they were bloody entertaining. I mean, the man used whatever was at his disposal. If he didn't have money to get a particular streetscape, he'd just use stock footage. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Glenn or Glenda, it's a 68 movie with 14 minutes of stock footage. But you know what? Who cares?
It's like Roger Corman making those Edgar Allan Poe flicks. Filming
the same sets again.
Same sets and filming two, three movies simultaneously while sets were being torn down. It's incredible. He was uncompromising in following his artistic vision at a time when certainly this subject matter would have been far, far, far beyond the pale. This was the time of... This is the 50s. This is what? Maltese Falcon. This is DOA. These are kind of...
Leave it to Beaver era, you know?
Yeah.
This is your typical... This is the nuclear family, you know? The father goes out to work. The mother stays at home and her resplendent in a beautiful dress while she's cooking and cleaning the housework. You got your 2.5 kids, etc.
Yeah.
And this man is putting his heart in his sleeve, making a film about
his personal peccadilloes, his desire, from his personal perspective, which his wife, I guess, came to accept.
Well, his girlfriend, and he never ended up marrying her.
Dolores
Fuller, but yeah.
Dolores Fuller, and he just, his pan to dressing up like a woman.
Yeah, he loved his Angora sweaters. He was a transvestite.
40 years prior to Rocky Horror, this thing really...
He was the original transvestite.
Yes.
40 years prior to Rocky Horror, 6 years prior to Caitlyn Jenner coming out and saying, you know, I am Kate.
Yeah.
This was, I mean, this was the equivalent of walking the cinematic plank. I mean, what this man did. And the reality is that when people watch Glenn or Glenn now, you know, a lot of it is like, okay, I'm going to watch through the perspective and the lens of Ed Wood Jr. being the worst director. Oh, it's hokey. There's some very incongruous scenes of Bela Lugosi saying some very extremely interesting lines. Yeah. You know, I'm going to quote one right now. Beware.
Beware.
Little dragon that sits on your doorstep. He eats little boys.
Little boys.
Big dog tails and big fat snails. Beware. Take care, beware, and of course, pull the string! Pull the string! Yes, okay, yes. The whole Bela Lugosi stuff, that was interesting.
Yeah, but it's just a mad scientist who they would cut to him and his beakers in his lab and dry ice and his and a raised eyebrow, and he could have been completely omitted from this film.
But the reality is that, just like Ed Wood himself, Bela Lugosi was someone that was spit out and turned out by the Hollywood system. Mm-hmm. He was, at one point, the biggest star.
You
know, in 1931, when he made, or 1930, when he made Dracula. And then, in the 50s, he was all but forgotten. He was, you know, through typecasting, through being overshadowed by his contemporaries like Boris Karloff, what have you, through substance abuse, you know.
Yeah, and to quote Norm Macdonald, he was box office poison at the time.
Through even a little bit of xenophobia, because he was Hungarian. But, I mean, the fact is that he was completely left on the fringes of the society to die. Ed Wood loved these outsiders. He loved these people on the fringes of society. And he brought them into his circle. He was so happy to meet a star of the caliber of Bela Lugosi. This was a big star to him.
Yeah.
And to put him in his movies, and he actually gave Bella, who I, you know, obviously, like, as time goes on, you know, people now, again, are revere Bela Lugosi. He's no longer considered a joke. But in 1953, he was considered to be a joke, right? Ed Wood gave him the opportunity to go out doing what he loved, and that was making movies, you know? Some might say it was a bit cynical to put a, you know, this fading Hollywood star in your movie just to get a few extra box office bucks. That when he was like, I got a big star in my movie, Bela Lugosi, people are like, Bela Lugosi, is he still alive? Now I'm taking that from the Tim Burton biopic.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
The reality is, he was just happy to give Bela the roles again, and Bela was happy to act in these roles again. It gave him something to live for in the last few years of his life. Bela Lugosi is up there on my Mount Rushmore of, like, you know, the greatest horror actors ever. And Ed Wood is up there as one of my absolute favorite directors because the man was nothing but passion. The man just loved cinema. And
there's no... you can't in any way fault him for wanting to put, even as Bela might have been a fading star by this point, but given the subject matter that he was tackling here, you almost had to attach this project to some sort of star, or else he would have gotten even less of an audience than he did with this, because this is something that is, again, for the mid-50s, whenever this was lensed. I guess Lugosi died in late 50s. I don't recall when he passed. This, way ahead of its time, dealing with transvestism, the line, I was put in jail because I was a man wearing women's clothing. This is a subject matter that even today people would deem to be unseemly or box office poison. Again, you can't deal with this subject too readily. It's become more accepted.
Yeah,
maybe you could.
We have that show. What's that show with Jeffrey Tambor? Do you know what it's called again? That's quite where he plays a woman. I mean, look, let's put it in 2015, this has finally become accepted. Or 2015, 2016, what happened?
You know, The Crying Game, even though, like, really put this into the forefront. But
even then, it was pretty damn shocking.
Yeah, at the time. But now we finally come to terms with this, what do you want to call it, lifestyle, or however you want to...
But, I mean, back in 1953, there was no such thing as an acronym LGBTQ. There was no GLAD. There was nothing. And you had this filmmaker, a completely heterosexual filmmaker, mind you, who enjoyed dressing up in women's clothing, and he said, I'm going to make a passion project about my proclivities. And the courage it takes to do that is unbelievable. Maybe he was a bit deluded to think that people would respond to this, and it would become a box office sensation, but that it's unbelievable that he actually, like, made such a movie in such conservative times. And...
It really does follow the template of the sort of 50s educational film, where it's very didactic. It's got the bulk of it has a voiceover, and it just follows this eponymous character of Glenn struggling with his gender identity, mm-hmm. with his girlfriend, recent fiance, grappling with his desire to look into store windows and yearn for the Angora, you know, sartorial splendor and the Angora sweaters that he could wear more comfortably and societally acceptably, you know, to, you know, string a bunch of adverbs together as a woman. So it's interesting. So he's yearning for acceptance both from society. Again, the preamble of this film says, "You are society, judge ye not." Mm-hmm. And also acceptance from his very accepting, it should be said, fiance.
Yeah, and it's interesting you use the word gender identity, because in 53 there is no those two words are not put together.
No,
there is like it's just gender. You're male or you're female. Whereas Edward was questioning gender identity, but at the same time, what he was saying was it matters not what your proclivities are. We are all human beings. We all live in this society. We all have this. We all are individuals, and let's just accept everyone for whom they are.
Yeah, and especially since, I guess as he put it, nature makes mistakes.
Mm.
he's trying to, I guess, explain away his proclivities with using the terminology of the time.
Well, whereas, technology. He would say at one point, like, I mean, is it so beyond the pale to think of a man wanting to dress in women's clothing? 10 years ago, 20 years ago, air travel was considered to be completely novel and wrong. I mean, if the creator wanted us to travel by air, he would give us wings.
Yes.
10 years ago, automobiles were considered to be completely wrong. If the creator wanted us to travel by a vehicle, he would give us wheels, etc., etc. You say, so this is what we're doing. This is a side where we're evolving, we're changing, and so on. So, you know.
And also bringing up the issue of suicide among people whose nascent born identity match with what they eventually grew into.
Yeah,
so he was talking about
suicide,
transvestite suicide, which is speaks to the present day and how it's my understanding that people who have undergone sex change procedures have a higher suicide rate than people who have not undergone such things. So it does not solve this psychological turmoil that they've dealt with. So
it's also those who have yet to undergo this actually, are wrestling with those gender identities, and because of the lack of societal acceptance. You know, I Am Kate is a very, very pat, facile examination of this, you know, lifestyle. Caitlyn Jenner, the former Bruce Jenner, you know, a man, 65 years old, part of this dynasty, this ridiculous manufactured Kardashian dynasty, who's able to then finally say, "Hey, I'm Kate. I'm a woman." And at the same time, it's like, sure, it's difficult for you, yes, but it's also a lot easier for you because you have lots and lots of money. You have a television show. You have
He's built into the star system for sure.
And you have. You know, so people are going to automatically accept you with a certain degree, whereas back in 1953, I mean, God, man, you could be stoned for this shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so what Ed Wood did with this movie, Glenn or Glenda, was beyond courageous. And when he...
You just think of Rock Hudson and all these closeted studio system stars who were just kept... whose identity was kept...
Concealed.
For the purposes of a box office draw.
For sure. And in a sense, I guess that's good that it worked outside the studio system, because he was able to basically put on this passion project, say, this is who I am. And so in doing so, we have this film, Glenn or Glenda, which is a very unique beast, because it's a man, you know, a filmmaker, doing what art is meant to do, which is to express your innermost self, good, bad, or ugly, and let the public accept it or reject it, what have you. You also have, you know, a little bit of ineptitude. I mean, you have these, like I said, we were talking about before, the incongruous scenes of Bela Lugosi as this weird sort of mad scientist narrator. You've got the 14 minutes of stock footage. But at the same time, for what it was saying, it's an important movie, and
well, I guess Mad Scientist, because you talk about the, let's say, he would argue the fluidity of gender identity or how you feel, and you have Mad Scientist continually and progressively toying with nature, and whether it be genetically engineered food,
mm-hmm.
You could talk about the Frankenstein elements, which they did reference in this film of, organ transplants, mm-hmm. where in its earliest infancy from baboons to humans, whether that failed. So the mad scientist was not altogether out of the realm of possibility. He was very adeptly chosen for this.
Yes and no, though, because Bela Lugosi he was very much omniscient, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he was a godlike figure. He basically, he was just there to comment on the action. He had nothing to say about...
Yeah, it's true.
He had no agency in
this is true.
Because after the story of Glenn Glennon, there's another story, a very small one, about someone who actually went through the operation and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, all Bela Lugosi's there is almost to observe and report and to say, pull the string, you know? But... So, yes and no. You know, I agree with you, but at the same time, I disagree with you.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
But at the same time, it's a very unique sort of piece of cinema because of what it was trying to accomplish, of what it was trying to say, and also just the fact, like, what went into making this movie. I mean, Ed Wood was, he would just scrounge around for whatever finance he can make. He was given some money by the producer saying, make us an exploitative movie. Put a lot of elements we want to play in the drive-in, and he made this personal passion project.
Yeah, and then as you said, interspersed later in post-production with more salacious elements of your more pin-up girls doing strip teases, mm-hmm. because the subject matter didn't really lend itself. When you have in the opening scenes where you have a victim of a suicide, mm. who is a transvestite who can't come to terms with their identity, mm-hmm. and they're found dead, dressed in full female regalia, and then this inspector, this police detective is trying to come to terms with this.
This is very interesting.
And broaching the subject with the psychiatrist.
Yeah, which shows a lot more like humanism out of the inspectors. This suicide
as being some sort of freak.
Yeah, this was Edward Regular Lyle Talbot who played the inspector.
Mm-hmm.
But so as a movie, Glenn or Glenda is no masterpiece. You know, I mean, there's a lot of silliness to it. There's a lot of hokiness to it. You can play. You can MST3 whatever it. You know, but the reality is, if you remove that lens and actually look at it and say, like, as a part of, like, cultural, like, the cultural zeitgeist and, like, what this movie is trying to say, it's very revolutionary. And I think that, in a sense, I'm almost surprised that Ed Wood is not considered to be, an icon of the LGBTQ community, because he's really one of the first to do this sort of thing on a somewhat mass scale.
Now, yeah, but probably as a result of him explaining it, his predilections away as being a subset of normal heterosexual behavior.
Yeah.
That's probably why
and
it's not as lauded now.
And
and using the term normal, which people now will raise their hackles over.
And
you can't
like
say anything's normal or not.
It seemed like his predilection for women's clothing was more for comfort than anything else.
Yeah.
Because he'd have to wear a constricting hat, which caused baldness.
Yeah. 7 out of 10 men who wore fedoras.
Yeah. Where did this statistic come from?
I don't know.
Who knows? But getting on to going beyond Glenn and Glenn and talking about the legacy of Ed Wood, as I said before, people might want to ironically watch an Ed Wood movie and say, yes, this is the worst movie ever made. But the reality is, they're watching these movies. Way more people will watch Plan 9 from Outer Space than will watch Pennies from Heaven, mm-hmm. from Douglas Sirk or Preston Sturges or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's lived on, and people actually will wear the shirts. They've embraced this man. You know what I mean? Whether it's ironic or not, I don't know. But the man has had a lasting legacy in the firmament of Hollywood. So, if you want to call him the worst filmmaker, I will tell you right now, you're dead fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. But I will also say that, you know what? at least at what his gang is due now, which is something he never got in his lifetime.
Yeah, much like Bela Lugosi.
And much like Vincent van Gogh, and like, you know, the hallmark of many a great artist.
Yeah, who never sold a painting in his lifetime, or maybe his brother sold maybe one, I can't remember, but he was so despondent and overcome with his inability to succeed in his chosen vocation. That's a great, great parallel for sure.
So, ultimately, I mean, it's an interesting discussion because, you know, I would ask you, what would you learn from this movie? And also, what would you learn from just, like, from Ed Wood himself?
Well, it's to express your art, damn the torpedoes, no focus group, just do, put out your own artistic vision in a, without regard for any, and really for any sort of commercial success. Really, he must have known when this thing was put out that it would just be a complete dud, unless he thought maybe it would be so controversial that people would flock to it. But there's just no way.
I think Ed Wood had this special sort of delusion that like geniuses have, where he actually thought that the masses would respond to what he was doing. So it was still courageous. What I learned is that, besides the fact that 7 out of 10 men become bald because they wear hats. No, what I've learned ultimately is that it's interesting to listen to the cognoscenti and the pundits and, you know, adopt the party line, you know, this is the worst filmmaker ever. But ultimately, watch films on their own merits and see for yourself whether or not it's a good film, a bad film, an entertaining film, what have you.
You know, and there's also reluctance to sentimentalize the characters. I'm thinking like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia or something, where it's just a, he's just a...
this is a Joe, working class Joe.
Yeah, he's not editorializing or anything. He's just showcasing this guy's life. Mm-hmm. And he's a workaday salaryman who goes to his job, comes home, and all he wants to do is relax in more comfortable garb, which happens to be female garb.
Yeah. Well, in a wig as well. But, but what I'm trying to say is, I mean, I would put Glenn or Glenda or Planet of Outer Space up against, you know, your Transformers 8 or whatever the hell Michael Bay is doing now, and you tell me which is a better movie.
For sure.
The worst filmmaker ever is not Ed Wood Jr., in my opinion. You maintain it's
Bruno Mattei. Or there's others. Antonio Margheriti is no bargain either. But there's lots you could slot into that into that category. Again, your Joel Schumachers, your these type of people who, it makes you wonder what Ed Wood would have done with $20 million or the equivalent of that time.
He would have bought a 70 lot years more ago. Stock footage.
Yeah, true enough.
So having said that, I will say I'm going to give a star rating Glenn or Glenda for
its influence in historical time. As a curiosity of its time, way ahead of its time.
Three and a half, for sure.
The same for me.
I think so.
So if you have any favorite Ed Wood films, again, we've mentioned...
Or if not Ed Wood films, how about like a malign film that everyone says is like a terrible movie that you absolutely adore? We'd love to hear what they are. Maybe we'll watch it, we'll podcast it ourselves. So choose a line at
reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, awful_movies. Like us on Facebook.
And we'll talk to you soon.